Welcome to the For Narcotics Anonymous podcast. Here we share audio recordings of NA members sharing their experience, strength, and hope. If you are a drug addict or think you have a drug problem, you are welcome to attend an NA meeting. Go to www.nahelp.org/meetings to find a meeting near you. On this website, you will also find more information about the Narcotics Anonymous program. Thanks for listening to this recording.
Bill, I'm an addict. Yeah. I'm not sure I like this thing right here. I like everybody closer, though. Brian told part of my stuff already. Yeah. I've been hanging out, like, you know, talking to people, and it's like I'm previewing my share. I'm like, I gotta stop this stuff, you know, giving these guys a little preview and stuff. A bunch of us were asked to speak, and I was already coming home from New Jersey. I'm living in Fairbanks, Alaska, and Brian asked me if I wanted to, you know, if I would be willing to do this, and I said, sure. I mean, I'm already going to be home in October in South Jersey, and I don't mind driving on out here and you know, hanging out with people. I've been trying to get out to this way anyway because I got a lot of friends on Zoom, which, you know, kind of blown up here in the last couple of years, and I've met a lot of people from around here, and I kind of wanted to see them in person anyway, and so it was a good excuse to come out. That's the end of it, huh? I'm that bad, and all of a sudden I'm cut off. I got it. It's all right, man, John. It's all right. So he said, yeah, you want to come out, and I thought, well, you know, what should I share about? I mean, what should be kind of the theme, the topic, and everything else? And I considered for a while and really didn't come to any kind of real deal until a little bit recently. And one of the things I realized is that it's kind of a history thing, and you just heard a lot of stuff about, well, history or whatever that was. The sanitized version of history, and I thought many of you probably heard a third hand, fourth hand version of history, I imagine, right? And that's probably not all that good. And I think probably the best thing we can do is, or at least what I can do is just talk about a first hand history, you know, my first hand experience with this, and how it kind of is part of history. And kind of like that, you know. I actually haven't spoken in a setting like this in God, 30 years. I think I can't remember the last time I've spoken online, if it's meetings and stuff, but not my normal shtick. You know, I like kind of working the outside in the room and hanging out with people and doing that kind of thing. Anyway. People ask me how long I've been clean, and I think the more significant thing is that I got clean when I was 19, and I've been clean ever since. I think that's a lot more significant, and always has been, because it tells that, you know, you can get clean at a very young age, and you can stay clean. Clean time just is not using it and getting a hell of a lot older. Hey, yeah, some of you agree with that. I mean, you know, I keep telling people, they're like, oh, that time must be wonderful. Listen. I give my left nut to have 5 years and be 24 years old again, if I can have the knowledge I have today, in a heartbeat. You know, I'll go around and tell people I got 5 years. I have a five-year coin if I could live, you know, and know what I know. Because that's what's most important, is what I know. Being older isn't helpful. It kind of sucks. I mean, a lot of us can say that. But I got clean at 19. I came in 1979. A lot of people came in 79 that are around here. It's kind of cool year. I came in like a lot of people did, because I got in trouble, and I ended up in a situation, and I was in front of a judge, and he said, you know, you can go do this thing over here, or, you know, I can sentence you right now. I mean, what fool says, sure, whatever, you know? And I talked to this person, and they said, we have this outpatient thing. Outpatient's perfect. You get to go home at night and use. I mean, right? And I'm right there with it, and I started going there, and I started going to this thing, and after about 3 weeks, you know, I listened a little bit, but I guess the biggest part was I tried not to use, and I really couldn't. I could only put a day or two together, and then I'd be out doing something, and then I'd be just, well, I'll just smoke pot on the weekends, And then I was, you know, it was always one thing. And after about 3 weeks, I mean, my life was, you know, I seen it for what it really was. And I decided to surrender. And I told somebody that, you know, I've been using this whole time. Because the judge did say something about, if you use during this time, you know, I'm going to send you to the vine. It's the highest thing and everything else. And so, you know, I took a chance because I told somebody who could have ratted me out or whatever. And instead, they helped me in. And they sent me to, they got me a chance to get a little time and go and start going to meetings. And I was 79 in South Jersey and there, and there wasn't any NA between, there was NA in Atlantic City and NA in Philly. And one NA in South Jersey where I was at. And nobody had ever heard of it. And I thought that, later on in life, I think it's pretty crazy because, you know, I was 19, I had long hair, did drugs, talked about doing drugs. And, you know, I would thought if somebody had heard about NA in the program I was going to, they would tell me to go over there. Because I think a lot of you guys have some stories like that, that, you know, those people chased the hell out. And I never did hear anything. And one of the first parts, and that's, you know, I kind of want to get into that history is, you know, there was some stuff happening in AC, but it wasn't everywhere, you know. And there was stuff happening in Philly, it wasn't everywhere. And I ended up in this program in Philadelphia mostly because... I didn't have a place to stay. I got kicked out of my mom's house right before Christmas, right after I had 90 days, and I spent a night in the car contemplating whether this clean shit was worth it or not. And thankfully, you know, it was that one, probably the closest I've ever been to using, and thankfully I had a girlfriend with me, and she loved me a lot, and she kept me warm, and so made it through the night, right? And the next day, I ended up over in Philly, and went to this thing called DRC. If anybody's from Philly, you know this. It's a big, huge treatment, your rehab thing where they send people all over. And I went in there, and they told me, well, are you from here or whatever? You got insurance? And I said, no. They said, well, just tell everybody you're homeless from Philly. And I ended up in this place, and it was basically a four-month program with drunks and then a 19-year-old. And I got in there, and they have good people in there. But, you know, there was a discussion in the hallway while I was standing there about, what the hell is he doing here? We can't deal with young people. You know, he's not going to clean anyway, basically. And, you know, he's just going to be disruptive. You know, most of them were 30, 40, 50-year-old drunks. But I had, you know, I was homeless. I just wanted a place to stay. I actually had some recovery. You know, I actually been, you know, in the book, going to step meetings, everything else. I had 4 months by about that time. So I ended up in this place. And the significant part isn't that stuff. I was there for a couple weeks. And somebody brought an H&I meeting in from NA. Oh, right? Yeah, you think so, huh? Yeah, you think so? I'm going to tell you how not to do H&I then. So this kid comes in and you know, it's me and all the drunks and then long hair hippie young guy, right? And he tells a story about shooting up and blah, blah, blah. You know, the drug log that went along. And now everything's great, I guess. I don't know. He kind of came after me after the meeting. He came talk to me because, well, the rest of the drunks didn't want to talk to him. You know, they're off to get coffee and shit. They didn't give a shit about an addict shooting up. And we had a nice discussion. He had no literature. He had no meeting schedule. And he told me that there's four meetings a week in Philly. They just reformed the area. And I thought, now remember, I don't know nothing about NA. This is the first time I've ever known anything. What is an area to a person that's never heard of it before? Right. I thought they just reformed the four meetings. I'm thinking, well, that's a fly-by-night outfit. I mean, the guy had no recovery, right? And I just dismissed it. And, you know, because, you know, while I was doing my thing over in the other place, and I was staying clean, and I was, you know, trying to learn to be a good person, I left, and I went to I went to the military. I ended up in Louisiana eventually, and I was a friend who, one of the people, you know, one of the people that relapses from time to time, but he's over in different places, and he was over at the meetings I was going to, but nobody took him seriously. He's relapsing from time to time, you know, but he was talking to NA, he started talking to NA stuff, and he got me a book, and he said, you should read this book, and I thought, wow, sure. I said, you know, I said, he says, it's like $880 at the time or something like that. I said, $880? Jesus Christ, that's expensive. I mean, I think the time, the one, the bigger book they had over there was going for $365 or something. I said, well, what the hell, you know? And I, so it was a second edition. I got it, and I started kind of thumbing through it. And don't you know, I landed on those traditions where they put the tapey stuff on, right? And I went, what the hell is this? He said, I don't know. I don't know. I was like, well, I'm thinking, this is a hell of a fly-bite outfit. But there, it was a time in my life. It was a time in my life where my first marriage didn't work because I was young and stupid and, you know, thought I was going to be able to fix the world. And so I was kind of rebounding from all that. And he says, good-looking girls over in N.A., which has brought a lot of guys into N.A., I want to say. So, you know, I figured, what the hell, and I went over there, and he was right, there are good-looking women in N.A., and I started reading the book, and the book is what changed everything, because it was things I already knew, but I learned by reading between the lines, and when I read the basic text, it was in black and white, and it was simple. I don't know if any of you have been over there, man. Some of them damn steps in that 12 and 12 go on forever. They ain't dying. I was going to a meeting, and then it's like, this 3 pages. Sets it out, perfect. And I was just loving it. I was just loving it. We started going to meet. We actually started an area. We started a meeting and then an area in Louisiana. And I was the ASR because I was the only one that had enough clean time. I think it was when it was 2 years or something, too. It wasn't much, but nobody had no clean time. You know, I mean, nobody had any clean time. Because I had like 5 years, I think I had either the most or second most clean time in the state, right, at that time. But, you know, I it was weird for me coming over because, you know, I was doing a thing and then you know, I'm doing different stuff. And I was being looked at differently all of a sudden. Like, you know, like I got something special or anything. I'm not nothing special. I mean, I'm just like everybody else here, just trying to get clean, stay clean. And you know, that was a little bit weird to get used to. But we started an area there, and I was ASR, and we had the meeting in the blood bank. I don't know if anybody knows Louisiana. There's like four cities around the corners, and then there's this one city in the middle, Alexandria. And that's where we were at, and there was no N.A. Obviously, New Orleans had a bunch, been there for a long time and everything. And so they wanted to start one there so that they could do the regional meeting in the middle. I mean, that was the only reason they wanted to do it. And so we ended up starting this thing. It's in a blood bank. Tragically, it was the middle of AIDS. I mean, we're talking 84, 85. We didn't really know what was happening with AIDS. And at one point during a regional meeting, there had been a bad accident, and they asked for volunteers for blood. And we all kind of happily, you know, because we're that kind of people, we all gave blood. I'm hoping people didn't die because of it, because we didn't know any better. But it's a strange thing, and I guess that goes into the part where I went to the convention shortly after that in Louisiana. I guess probably 85 in Baton Rouge, and one of the things that was happening was the people I was around were just people out of treatment, and they didn't know nothing about NA. They were basically, you know, they were doing aftercare the best they could. I mean, they didn't know anything. I couldn't teach them nothing. This other guy didn't know too much. There really wasn't anybody around to teach us N.A. I mean, I could teach recovery, but it's different, right? And I knew that. I knew I shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff, you know? So we were just there doing a thing. They had this convention and stuff. And in the meantime, I've been reading the basic text. And I'm like, these aren't the people in front of me, not you guys, at the meetings there in Alexandria. These aren't the people that wrote this book. I got to find the people that wrote this book, because these freaking people know what they're talking about. You know, they got something here that I want. They got that simplicity that I've been looking for. And I went to the convention. I found those people. And the reason I know I found those people is because, you know, there wasn't a lot of dancing. There wasn't a lot of workshopping. There wasn't a lot of party. Okay. New Orleans is a big gay area. There was a lot of people, and then we still didn't know it was H. You know, we were getting it from shooting up. We still at that point hadn't realized that, but a lot of hard and tough bikers were coming up with it, and then, you know, everybody thinks they're gay, right? I mean, this whole thing was going on at the same time, and they had some kind of like meetings and stuff, like discussions, and people shared their experience, and I was like, holy crap, this is like an adult program. These people are for real, you know? I mean, they're really talking about life and death stuff that matters to people. You know, it wasn't no bullshit relationships and the rest of that crap. I mean, this is because people were dying. It was serious. And at that point, I think I was all in for NA. It was shortly after that I got moved around. So when I was in the Air Force, I joined the Air Force and moved around. I ended up in Alaska. And when I finally went to Alaska, I knew that if there wasn't NA there, I was going to have to start it. I mean, I felt really strongly about it. But, you know, to my delight, when I got there, I had a little bit of a thing going on in Fairbanks, Alaska. Who the hell figured, you know? But they already had something going on. And they were crazy NA people. I'm serious. I'm like, you know, because some of you guys know stuff. I guess for some reason, when the book first came out, the first edition, somehow they got in their mind that there was only going to be one book available for each registered group. And so at the time, they only had like 3 meetings a week or stuff, but there was like 7 of them. And they all wanted a book. So instead of just lying, they actually started 4 more meetings. And I hit there about that time when they had 7 meetings a week. And they all had their red books and blue books and stuff. And God only knows. Anyway, I got up there and I started doing my thing there and starting to learn about that and the service structure. And we had an area and we wanted to do things. And we read some of the guides, you know, on how to do. I was literature chair at one point. And right away I thought, well, it can't be just me being a salesman for Nulls. Well, it was WSO then. I mean, that can't be the literature position, can it? And so I read in the thing, and you can do some other stuff. And one of them was, you know, start a newsletter. So I was like, what the hell? Let's start a newsletter. And so I started a newsletter, and we started doing some stuff. And PI was doing that kind of stuff. And we were doing stuff, and we had a guy, a friend of mine that was involved in PI, and he was trying to get stuff going on with the state and getting around the state and taking it there and trying to help form areas because, you know, Fairbanks is actually the second biggest city, so I mean, there's a lot of outlying areas, and we started doing that, and he was terribly interested in PI, and back then, anybody that was interested, they encouraged a lot at the office, and he was talking to them all the time, and this year we decided to do a convention. It was 87, we were going to do a convention, and we wanted to kind of do it around PI and stuff, because that's what he was into. And he called down there and said, listen, can you send somebody up or whatever? And they sent the vice chair up. He's sitting back there. And they sent him up. And he came up in the middle of a snowstorm in March, where it was cold and it was pretty and it was great. And we started learning shit about NA as a whole. And we started, you know, figuring some stuff out, like we started putting stuff together because, like, stuff wasn't really adding up. There was some weirdness going on, you know. There was things that were coming to us, and we were like, what the hell is this about? And so we were already, and we're worried the hell up there, and we were already kind of skeptical. And, you know, and that's kind of the interesting thing about my experiences. I've always been in these places out here and there where the mainstream news, you know, wasn't there all the time, and we were just kind of getting clued in on a lot of stuff. And we were just trying to use our best senses. And anyway, Billy came up and started sharing a lot of stuff going on. We started getting involved. I started traveling a bit more and getting to some conventions, meeting people like Bo and Terry and Greg P. and people like that, and starting to find out what was going on and trying to get involved with a little bit of history and stuff just to, you know, get a clue of what the hell is going on here and see if we can, you know, if it would help us to do service, because that was in the end. I mean, we wanted to spread NA up there. I mean, that's all we cared about. There's always been that kind of, I don't say, I hate saying us and they, but there's always been a thought of organized service structure kind of thing, and then people probably looking more for results. And you know, a lot of people taking some quick measures, I guess, to try to do some stuff, and it wasn't really good all the time. But their frustration I understood, because you know, we were trying to do stuff, and it was pretty frustrating with a lot of the stuff we were getting back from region and stuff like that. I ended my, you know, I probably wouldn't go that deep in that, but I ended my time there. I stayed there about 6 years, and I ended my time there in Fairbanks being the RSR, you know, I kind of did all the different positions. I ended up being the RSR. And, you know, we were in a huge controversy that other people can talk about later. I don't really care to talk about it now because other people will. But I went to the conference, and it was like, we're going to settle this stuff here. And it was 91. We were just talking to some people outside, but some people they knew there. And I went there with a full group conscience of my region and tried to do the right thing. And I was very disillusioned by everything that happened there. And I think that changed a lot for me at that point. I didn't think NA was going to, it can't work in that level, at an organized level, in my mind. It just was inefficient and ineffective. And I kind of like, I don't say I lost my way, but I kind of didn't know what to do, you know, and I was getting ready to change stations again and leave Fairbanks. And I was wondering, you know, where do I go from here, right? I mean, I don't know if other people have been in the area where you're like, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, I couldn't go back. I knew that. I couldn't go back to those people. I know a lot of people have gone over there and found some happiness. I can't. I know it in my heart. It just, this, you know, it wasn't working. But how do I go forward with this? And I got orders to England. I went to London, not London, England, but Cambridge, England. I went to England, and I was still kind of in this kind of, you know, area of not. And I thought, you know, I just want to get back to the basics again. Just go to meetings and serve at a meeting and at a group and do that thing. And I went over there, and it was wonderful. First of all, I love England. I mean, the screen is wonderful. The job I had there was really cool. I mean, one nice thing about recovery is I also had good jobs, too, that I really love, and it's just made life better. And actually, there's some funny stories there. You know, I'm actually, you know, I didn't do a whole lot of bad stuff when I was, I didn't get caught for a lot of bad stuff when I was using. And so, therefore, when I was in the military, I mean, you know, there wasn't a whole lot on my stuff. And I ended up with a very high clearance, and I was doing really cool stuff with stuff I like to play with. But I go to England, and there's this thing called Narcotics Anonymous I'm involved in. And, you know, part of having a security clearance is just telling the freaking truth. Because if you tell them the truth, then nobody can blackmail you. And so, you know, I kind of laid the shit out there and figured God's going to work how God works. And they were cool with it kind of all. They said, yeah, there's a lot of people worse than you, which really scared the hell out of me. But, and so I'm over there, and I got this clearance and stuff, and I'm trying to find a meeting. Because it's 93, I guess, 92, maybe early 92. And it was still doing meeting schedules and stuff, and that's about it. Really didn't have a helpline. And so I find out where the place is, and it's at a needle exchange. Okay? We didn't have many of them back then there. And so I go over there. Now, I'm just stationed over there. I'm an American citizen, you know. And I go to the meeting, and, of course, nobody's there. So I park, because we come early, right? I guess they don't. And I sit on the stoop, and I'm waiting. I'm thinking, this is bad. You know, I'm a U.S. citizen with the military clearance, and I'm sitting at a needle exchange waiting for somebody to show up. You know, I'm like, John, you know, you're like a wreck on this thing.
Yeah.
And anyway, somebody showed up finally, and about 10 minutes late, and we did that thing. And I started going to meetings there. And if you remember the time in the 80s, everybody had a different edition of the book. And so you would go to a book study meeting, and it would get very confusing because when they did changes to the fourth and then, you know, put the lines back in the fifth, stuff was different than it was in the third and third revised and first and second. And so you'd be in a book study meeting, you'd be reading stuff, and it would go to some other paragraph, and people were like, whoa, what are you doing that? And, well, it was a small group. The room itself couldn't fit 12 people. I mean, it's tiny, over top of a chip shop, which is great. And there's 6-7 of us in the home group there. I said, listen, now I don't want to make no, I really don't want to make a whole lot of waves. I really don't. You know, the controversy has been crazy. It looked like it had been put to bed, right? Because we supposedly had a worldwide conscience on the baby blue and stuff. But I said, listen, I got these books, because I've always believed in them, and free books for addicts is great. I got these books, and I said, the key to them is they all read the same. We can all have one there, and you take one if you want, or
we can all at least read out of the same damn book. And they thought that was great. And so they did, and we had this lovely meeting. And for a couple months, about 3 or 4 months, and then some visitors came from out of town. And they were like, what's this? And, you know, I was like, well, you know, they were like, is this and this? I said, it's no big deal. It's just, you know, we all have the same book and everything. Because I really don't want to get into this again. You know what I mean? I don't want to get into it again. And anyway, he starts asking questions because he's curious. He's like, it's a good book, whatever, whatever. Come to find out, we supposedly had this worldwide conscience, but I think there was only two people over there that knew anything about any of the book controversy, like for the whole time. Because the guy that came to it, my buddy Rob, he was very involved with everything. And he didn't know nothing. Nobody knew nothing about nothing. And it was like, oh my God, here I am in this again. And I ended up having a debate with one of the trustees that was from England over there. And, you know, I didn't want to get into all that. You know, I just want us to go along and do our thing. And I've always been that way. I guess, that, you know, that's kind of really what I kind of want to kind of get the end of part into is you know, we're all here. We got to find a way to get along because in the end, all that crap doesn't matter. You know, all that crap doesn't matter. We're saviors for each other because it's something magical, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why I understand you people. You take somebody from a different race, a different background, a different money thing, a different political spectrum, everything, all those things, totally different. And yet somehow we connect because we're addicts. And that, you can't deny that. That's the way it is. We connect that way. And it's like, these other things are those same things trying to divide us. And it's about getting down to the basics of what Narcotics Anonymous is and try to share that with the next person, a newcomer, with each other when we're trying to understand. Because I'm still learning. I think I'm doing good because I'm still learning. You know, I'm still doing better. And that's good, too. And I like talking to people. I like especially talking to new people. They have weird perspectives. They say the stupidest things. And some of them make sense. They do. Christ, I never thought of that because we've all thought of it the same way. All of us have got a little bit of time. You know, we've kind of gotten into a thing and we've all believed that. And then somebody says something different. It's like, well, hell, I've never looked at it like that. You know, there's some crazy stuff in there that freaks people out when I say it. But, you know, the basic text just suggests you have a sponsor. Believe it or not, it suggests you have a sponsor. Really, they don't really talk about writing the steps very much, you know. They really don't talk about writing the steps. Is it? Am I saying you shouldn't have a sponsor or you shouldn't write the steps? No. Boy, it doesn't really say that. And there's other ways to do a lot of these things. People flip out about the fourth and ninth tradition and they took stuff out. Listen, the fourth and ninth tradition haven't changed. It still means the same damn thing. You can put paragraphs in, take them out. Don't make no difference. Damn fourth and ninth tradition need the same thing. I think what the paragraphs in is a little clearer. Don't get me wrong, and I think some of the writings in the Gray Book, and even in some other books that talk about traditions, clear a lot of things up too. But nobody's changed the meaning of the traditions. They read simply. I keep telling people, stop reading the traditions at the meeting, because newcomers are getting confused because you read this crap and then you do something totally different, and they think they're stupid and they can't figure it out. They think there's something wrong with them because these are plain, and yet you're doing something else. I see it, you know. Right, we're free, we're self-supporting through our own contributions. Listen, we got this event down here, it's $20, blah, 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 everybody needs to come. I need you to do service, blah, 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 come down. You know what I mean? I mean, they're not stupid, they see stuff. You know, they buy a book for $12 and go, hey, no way in hell it costs $12 to make this goddamn book. No way in hell. I mean, I've been smoking crack for 6 years and I know it don't cost that much, right? That's what they're telling us, right? They're like, what the hell? You know, and there's so many different things. I did a share guide. I don't know where it was. And I, like I said, this is not a big thing for me. I don't do this very much. But I did this share, and they recorded it, you know, because sometimes we record crap. And it was on what was the NA program. And the whole thing was kind of like me just going off, what isn't the NA program? Because there's a lot more of that what isn't the NA program that is in NA. And I think it chases people away, turns people off from it. People sometimes get forced into it by either the sponsors or other people in their sponsor family, whatever the hell that's called, that's about. And they get pushed into these things, and they end up, you know, doing things maybe they don't really want to do, you know? And you know, I know sometimes we need to push people, and they do need to do stuff they don't want to do. But you know, sometimes they need to have the freedom to come to it on their own. And so anyway, I did this year, and I don't like nothing I ever do, and I'll probably hate this too. All the things I should have said, all the things I did say, it's like, who the hell? They didn't understand that. I didn't even understand it. But for some reason, I really like this. And it's like on YouTube now. You know, it's like a YouTube thing, and it's freaking hilarious. Like I said, I actually enjoy listening to it myself because I hit on notes that I wanted to do. You know what I mean? I wanted to hit those things. And one of the nice things about sharing is I think I get a chance to kind of expound on a whole bunch of different little things that I've been thinking about. You know, I get a chance to actually put my stuff out here. And I realize that when other people get up here too. And I like to sit down and listen. It's like, all right, here's your big chance. You know, you've been wanting to, you know, let us know how you feel about this stuff. You know, bring it on. Let's have it. You know, because I think that's great. It's like, what do you think? You know, I evaluate it. I see whether it's good or not, whether it's worthwhile, whether, you know what I mean? I mean, I get to do all that stuff. And some of you, a lot of you are crazy. A lot of you say crazy shit. A lot of you say stuff I really disagree with. But, you know, I learn stuff from all of it. And sometimes I hear stuff and I go, wow, that's, you know, that's a different way to look at that. I look at things a lot different than a lot of people do. I don't think it takes much to do the steps. I think they're pretty simple. They're hard as hell to live in your life, but I don't think they're complicated. They seem pretty simple to me. They seem pretty plain. I mean, it certainly took me a time to work through them. I mean, you know, I had to come to terms with being an addict and the idea of my life, and then the idea of my life being unmanageable, which means this was the thing I finally figured out, which means I can't manage it later on. It's not like, well, now you stop doing drugs, then you manage it. They didn't say that nowhere. You know, and it takes a while to come to believe. I didn't have any belief in God or anything else. It took me time to come to believe. You know, when I started seeing all the miracles in my life, the coincidence talks about in the basic text. You know, I started seeing a lot of them in my life. So I seen, hell, there's something out there that looks like it's trying to help me out. I still don't understand any of it, but there seems to be something out there trying to help me out. And it keeps pointing me at you people, you know, to help me out. For answers, for the most part, you know, and coming to the understanding of using that word God, using that three-letter word, that horrible three-letter word, that word God, and so on and so forth, and it goes on. I've actually realized that, you know, the steps, the first nine steps do a house cleaning. You know, there's a big house cleaning happens, but then, when you hit the tenth step, right, you start practicing those principles you learned in those nine steps. You start practicing them on a daily basis. And I always relate it to the thing that makes the most sense to me is the early Karate Kid. You know, I learned stuff like wax on, wax off. I learned paint the house. I learned all those things. And then God hit me in the head when something happened and said, dude, that's wax on, wax off. That's that principle. That's that spiritual principle. You know, paint the fence, that's that spiritual principle. That's what you need to do. You know, these are the things you need to do. And I bring it down that simple thing. I mean, I've always said the 11th step is, and the 10th step is that basically that way. And it's like, and then when you fuck up, you know, let's fess up to it right away and make things right. You know, this amends stuff isn't about, I'm sorry. It's about making things right. And the 10th step is the same way. You know, when I'm wrong, properly admit it and make things right, basically. 11th step's always been a standalone step for me. It's all about increasing our beliefs and our meditation. And I love that it's like it's wide open. You know, you go find what you like. I found something early on, and I love it. And I tell people about it, and they look at me like I'm crazy. It's not for them. It's fine. It's for me. It's for a few other people. You have other things. It's wide open. We can do that. And the 12 steps, simple. It's like, first of all, it makes a statement, right? It says, having a spiritual awakening is all these steps. Well, great. Wonderful. I had a spiritual awakening with all these steps. Yeah, that's true, right? If you did it, if you're doing it and you're living it, you certainly have an awakening of spirit. And then it says we help addicts, right? Carry the message. That kind of, you know, puts us on a journey. And then it says practice principle of our affairs, which is basically a 10th step again. You know, it's basically a 10th step again. It's reminding us, listen, stupid, if you forgot over here, you're supposed to be practicing these principles in your life every day, all the time, you know, from moment to moment, which I really like. And so, you know, it takes us into traditions. And again, I go back to that. The traditions are simple. They really are. Just do what they say. But we don't. And I'm I don't understand. I really don't, because I've tried. The one that always stands out to me is, well, I'll never be organized. Because every time we tried to organize stuff, it just seems to go poorly. I guess, is that a good word? Goes poorly? I mean, it really does. I mean, I've never seen such stuff that would happen, would come up. I could say hate and all the rest of the crap that comes up, you know, dividing people and everything and crazy. And nothing gets accomplished. You know, I can go through a bunch of examples of those bastards at World and other people that are in, you know, regions and stuff like that, and this, that, flying around, blah, blah, blah. But you guys all know that crap. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, yeah, of course it's wrong. You look at it, it's wrong. It's wrong. Of course it's wrong. No addict should be above another, and we shouldn't be doing these things. And in the end, they haven't helped anybody, you know? And that's always the proof for me. In the end, they haven't helped anybody. This is my opinion on this whole deal. God help us write a basic text. I mean, the story of the basic text, hopefully Bo will go into it. To me, it was amazing. They took a whole bunch of input, just lines, small things, and they just stuck them in paragraph and chapter headings. And they had 8 of them, and they had 2 for leftovers. And they just filled that up. And then they tried to make it make some sense to flow. And then they worked that a bit, and then it came out. No book's ever been written like that. Are you freaking kidding me? No book's ever been written like that. And it's like, you take this book, and you translate it into any language, and it works. And see, this has been my thought when I've seen about growth in NA. Growth happened in the U.S. when the Gray Book came out, it really started. But when the book came out proper, and they finally actually printed it a year or two later, and we finally got enough to actually send to people a year or two later, and the growth was explosive. And then we wrote a bunch of new literature. Somebody did. And we just went to nothing. We went to nothing. But around the world, though, it exploded, especially in languages that weren't English. And the reason for that is the first book they translated was the basic text. And it still had the magic. And I don't care if they were translating the 5th or 6th edition either, because they're going to take that treatment ease out of it and put the addict back into it, because they're addicts and they're translating it for their people. And every place that started, every place that they've done that and was able to start printing them themselves and pass them out to their people, and it has exploded. It's been the magic to everything, is the basic text. The story of Iran is amazing because it's the same thing. You know, the 2 addicts from L.A. or whatever, that's a story I've heard, you know, moved back to Iran and took a base text with them. They translated it, and they started doing all kinds of stuff. They had a couple hundred thousand people before anybody in the world knew they were there. You know, it just took off. It exploded because they had a basic text translated by addicts into their addict speak. You know, a lot of people think you're supposed to translate it word for word. Trust me, it won't read like, it'll read terrible. If you ever translate anything word for word, try Google Translate. You know, you're like, what the hell is this? But when you take addicts that understand both languages and they understand the principle or the idea that's trying to be done, and they can do it in the slang or the language that they do, it's always going to be magical. And I really, truly believe that we've gone off course with all this stuff written by professionals. And it's because the proof's in the pudding, you know what I mean? And so that's why I do what I do. You know, I give out free basic texts. I try to get one to every person. I think every person in the world, if we can get a basic text to every person, the magic of the basic text will help a lot of people. And hopefully when they come to our meetings, we're not too fucked up, okay? That's our responsibility, right? It's not too fucked up to have a welcoming thing for all addicts and to not treat anybody different and come in there and give them our real message. You know what I mean? We're not going to sugarcoat it. Let's face it. Come on. Using is using. We all know what using is. I know there's a lot of confusion, it seems, these days, but I don't understand it. We're addicts. I know each and every one of you know what using is. You know, we know when we're using. So, you know, we need to tell people that. That's using, you know? We know it, you know it, everybody knows it, you know, and if you want to keep doing it, that's fine. But if you want to be clean, then be clean and join us, you know. And in the meantime, have some coffee, sit down, and, you know, don't share, though. We don't need to know how to use. We already know. We've already made it here. And so, and I'm hoping that we can all kind of start putting a lot of differences aside and start teaching that basic message again through the basic text of NA, which is, you know, pretty much, is it perfect? Probably not. A lot of people love the great book. And I got to say, there's a lot of parts in it. It is a draft. And so there's going to be parts you're not going to like, and there's parts probably don't be in there. But somewhere between the gray book and then the approval form, which became the basic text, and changes that happened, you know, more, there was more input in between, you know, there's a really, really good book in there. Because there's probably about, 50 pages probably out of the gray book that would be nice if it's in the basic text. There's probably, you know, a couple hundred pages of that's probably good that they, you know, you read some stuff in the gray book and you go, thank God they dropped that. You know what I mean? Then you read other stuff and you go, how in the hell did this make the cut? So, you know, that's what I'll say about the great book. It's a draft. I take stuff at face value. I take all things like that at face value. You know, there's only anything, stuff that I take is totally the bottom line, and that's the steps and traditions. The steps and traditions as they're written. The essays afterwards are just our ideas of how to try to live them. They may not fit you, they may. But the steps and traditions are the solid thing. That's the whole foundation. And those are the things that I try to live my life on. I mean, I've been trying. And like I said, I've been doing this since I was 19 years old. And I'm real happy. I'm real happy. I'd like to go back when I was 24 years old. But, you know, I don't think God's going to let me make that deal. Otherwise, the rest of you guys be over on it. Anyway, I just kind of want to kick off everything and just tell you a little bit about the path I was on, the things I seen, how it affected me from the side, because most of the history you hear is, you know, this happened at the conference in this year, and those bastards did this, and this happened over here, and then they sued us over there, and you know what I mean, and that's great, but it's like, how did it affect the people on the peripheral, on the outside, that were getting partial news, that were getting all kind of weird shit, because, I don't know anymore. So I think it's time for me to shut up. Thanks, everybody. All right.